Hi and welcome to What's Next. This is a new episode and as always, Andrea and I, we are your hosts. So enjoy this week's episode and we start right away. Have fun listening. Good morning. Thank you that you're my guests today. How are you?
Fine, how are you?
Hello, Therese. Fine, yes.
Great. We start right away with the first question. Who are you? Please introduce yourself in the studio.
We are Tiziano Schürch and Rina Rolli. We are two young architects from Switzerland, and we decided to join forces in 2019 after we finished our education at university. And we work between, let's say, mostly between Zurich and Lugano in Switzerland, so between the German and the Italian part. And on the side, we are also active in teaching. So I'm an assistant at teaching assistant at ETH, and Tiziano is active as a teacher, as a professor in Barcelona.
Yeah, and we founded the name of our studio, Studio Ser, so Schürch e Rolli, and yeah.
Sounds really impressive already. But before we get deeper into this, we have some warm-up questions. First, what's your favorite drink? Alcoholic, non-alcoholic?
Drink has to be alcoholic, so
it can also be a glass of water.
No, I would say as simple as a and as alcoholic as a Negroni. So I would say Negroni.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I would say, let's say, in the club, when I go to a club, it's a vodka mate.
Can you remember the last time you went to the club?
Yes, I do, actually. The corona rules are not so strict anymore in Switzerland.
Ah, okay. Good to know. But both good choices. I also like very much Negroni. Yeah. If you could develop a skill overnight, what would it be? Anything you want.
Well, I think Tiziano and I should choose two different ones so we can each give something to the other. Now, for me, I think it would probably be the ability to switch off this constant comparing between architects in the scene. I would like to turn off the FOMO, so the fear of missing out. Mm-hmm. Because I think especially in the creative scene, this constant competition and comparing like is weighing a lot, but I think it would also give me the chance to, I think, liberate myself in my private life a lot from things, but also create probably the completely different architecture. And it sounds very easy to get rid of it, but it's actually not that easy.
No, I don't think it's easy at all.
No, I also completely agree. I was expecting like a director answer, and I imagined just like a super nice skill would be to being able to get teletransport from one place to the other. I mean, for example, for me, living between Barcelona, Lugano, and Zurich, and having the chance to kind of combine the best or the special aspects of each place would be great. There is something that get close to the teletransportation, which are flights, but this is, let's say, not the best option in 2022. So, teletransportation will be great.
It would be. So then you are kind of a superpower together if you do this.
Yeah.
What's your favorite hobby besides architecture? Or is architecture your hobby?
This is a difficult question, I think, always for architects. Of course, we have private lives. Of course, we go hiking sometimes. Of course, we go seeing our grandmas. But at the end, I think that besides architecture, we have other interests that are quite close to architecture. I have to say that for me, actually at the moment I'm doing a master also at ETH in spatial planning. And so this is kind of my hobby, which is architecture on a bigger scale, on a more territorial scale. And yeah, actually at the moment, I don't have the chance to, have many other hobbies, unfortunately, or fortunately.
So you teach, you do a master as a hobby besides this, and you have the office.
Yeah, exactly.
And you travel a lot around.
Yeah, and we're constantly on the train between Zurich and Lugano. So hobbies, yeah, they're not so easy in this moment of life.
And you two still have time for my podcast. I feel really happy about that. So you are a really young architecture office. Why did you want to be self-employed? Why not say, no, we start in an office and then let's see?
Well, at least I started in an office after graduation, and then I slowly went into self-employment together with Tiziano. But we were lucky enough to have our first commission, which was a public commission. And this gave us kind of the kickoff to have our own office. And I mean, we also like to be able to implement our own ideas and without having to justify, or to justify to the client, of course, and to the people of the place, but being able to not be supervised by another architect. I think this is a very nice way of working.
I think there are also some, I mean, it's very nice, but it's also not always the easiest thing, of course, from an economical point of view, but also the experience that we have. We are constantly investing so much time and effort to get some idea or some technical, for example, know-how that if we would have probably worked longer into an architecture office, we would have now already. And now, since we started almost directly after the studio, we have to learn everything by ourselves. So it's very fascinating, because I think it's super super nice to also learn it by our own, but it's also quite an effort.
So sometimes there are sleepless nights, I guess.
I mean, we have an ongoing building site at the moment, so.
Oh, okay.
That's something to worry about.
Do you already have employees?
We had an intern last year, but no, at the moment we don't. We also, I think, like the freedom of for the moment of being small and being the two of us and having the, at least in the theory, having the possibility to go working into one place or the other one, and having this flexibility that with a bigger office structure, it wouldn't be probably possible. So I think we are still enjoying this.
Yeah, completely understandable.
Mm.
It's better to do it with the one close to you, and then when you're fixed and everything is clear and you're not so, you're more calm, then you can maybe
Yeah, it's also a financial question. Now we have to worry about our own salary, and if it's one a little bit higher and a little bit lower, it's also fine. Once you have an employee, it has to be a constant. And this is, I think, something we don't want to have at the moment. I think we are enjoying this freedom.
So you have an ongoing construction site right now. Do you, besides this, do competition, or do you concentrate on this construction site?
Okay. Well, for the moment, we are also the same freedom that we are trying to keep by not having a bigger office structure. We also have it in the in our way of conceiving our practice. So we are not only working on like 100% of our practice. Irina is making some furnitures with another colleague from Basel. She's teaching at ETH. I'm doing the master. I'm doing this. I'm teaching in Barcelona. So I think that for the moment we are just looking for a certain amount of work with our architectural practice, but that still allows us to do other things that we think that it's super important. We are still quite young, and to get other experiences from other fields that are not just the direct, let's say, making and building architecture, for us it's very important. So we just have actually at the moment, we have other projects, but our smaller project, we are doing a house in Freiburg, in Switzerland. But beside that, at the moment, we are not doing competition. So we have these three ongoing projects that are direct commissions.
So you both sit at the intersection of education and practice. How important is this intersection in your work and your ability to embrace ideas?
I think it's crucial. I mean, we were lucky enough to get actually a job at a university nearly right after graduation, which is a very nice thing to have. It's extremely important, at least for me, then Tiziano, I don't know, but to, like, my students are only six years younger than me, but they have a completely different mindset, and I love to work with them because they kind of give me the freshness to kind of stay tuned with what is going on in the mind of young people. And of course, I'm also very young, but for example, and I think we will get to talk about this a little bit later, but for them, sustainability and climate change is like the biggest topic, whereas when we were studying, this was slowly rising, but was certainly not kind of the main aspect you would think of when working on a project. Mm-hmm. And these aspects and these freshness that comes from teaching, for me, is very crucial and gives me also somehow always new drive to then on the other end of the week kind of work on my own projects.
I also think that for me, but I think that it happens to everyone, that it's teaching, the fact of having the chance to teach, to bring some content to other people that are usually younger than you, it's an incredible exercise to kind of make order in your thoughts and what's actually important for you, since you have to bring it, to explain it, and to share it with other people. So there is this kind of selection and also reordering some things that you more or less consciously find interesting, and you have to like formalize them, put them into words. And I think this is a very useful exercise.
That's true.
And let's be honest, I mean, how great is it that in part of your architectural life, anything is possible, and in the other, you have a lot of more of constraints in the real world when you're building. And it's nice to have this space where just anything stays possible.
And every semester is different also, no? This is also great. And one project lasts years and it's never ending. And,
yeah, that's true. That's what I probably miss most about university time, that everything you do was actually possible and you had the whole freedom to do whatever and whenever, not from 9 to 5. Who or what inspires you? You already told me your students inspire you for some point, but is there a special person or is it nature that inspires you before you maybe start some design process?
We have to admit we don't really have one architect that inspires us. I think for us, because we are so bound to the context we work in, we are inspired mostly by the life of people that happen around the site where we operate. So we make a disproportionate amount of time available for our analysis that we have at the beginning of our project. And there we, in public commissions, we talk to nearly every inhabitant that is around the site or that is kind of involved into the project. And there we get inspired by the stories that we are told, the anecdotes, by how the spaces are lived. So actually it's the context and the people that live in it.
Yeah, trying to grasp really the place in its deepness, which is also historical, try to understand the identity, try to understand what is important for the people living there. And yeah, and so not only the physical context.
Well said. What importance has nature in your project? What's your approach in terms of climate change? So the planet is burning. What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely true. I think kind of nature and climate change are for sure kind of change together. At the same time, we think that sustainability can have a lot of different facets. For sure, a house or a building is sustainable when it's made out of sustainable material with sustainable heating and everything. But we have a little bit, apart from this, like on top of this, we have a little bit an other approach in sustainability, because we think that if let's say a building is kind of radicated in the identity of a place and the identity of the people can identify with the building, then this building will be taken care for, it will be maintained, and it will be, how do you say this, it will be probably not demolished as soon as buildings are demolished in Switzerland, because the people can identify. And we think that this is also one kind of sustainability. So the longevity of the life of a building is for us created a lot with the identification of the people with this building.
I completely agree. And also I would add that in our, we had the chance to work for some municipalities. And I mean, for us, the work of the architect is not only the fact of being sustainable in what he or she is building or designing, but also trying to bring this theme, these aspects, for example, to a broader publicum, for example, politicians. Now we had the chance to also try to convince politicians in the importance of some aspects. So in this sense, I think that we also believe quite a lot in the role of the architect as someone that has this almost activist in the sense of being able to communicate, to convince other people, and not only by doing his her technical work in the most sustainable way as possible, but to try to create this dialogue that then promotes sustainability.
And let's be honest, like in Switzerland, building gets taken down way before their expiry date, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a real issue because people have the feeling that it doesn't fit their demands and standards anymore. And rather than overthink our standards and our norms and our needs, it just keeps like good building infrastructure keeps being torn down. And I think that this is the first point where we need to work on.
So there's no thought given to retransfer them into something different?
Very little. I mean, there is a lot of financial interest in investing from pension funds and whatsoever. But so there is a lot of money that needs to circulate, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's better circulating when it's on something new rather than on something that is refurbished.
Do you think there's a need to build at all anymore?
Probably depends where, no? If it, the thing is that also if you look at the population of Europe in general, let's say it is now getting to a phase of stabilization, and then it will be probably decrease. But this is on if you look at the situation as a whole, if we make like a medium rate of all the growing and the decreasing, more or less it's stable. But the thing is that there are like regional differences in which, even though we would have enough space for everyone, the fact that people are still attracted by some centers, in those centers, even though in other places you would actually have the chance to give space to inhabitants, you still have to build. We actually in Ticino, for example, where we are from and where we are mostly working, we have a very high amount of empty buildings. In some cities, even up to 10%, which is really a lot in Switzerland. Zurich has like 0.something. And so here we think that that now the importance, it's much more on what's on the relation between the built. So much more on the public space, much more on how to bring value there where for decades has been built without any concern of what is actually the whole product, the whole composition. So also the project that we are doing at the moment now in this Mugio Valley that is now being built is actually not really about building, because there are 7 very small interventions that kind of give a new value to places that already exist, but the architecture itself, it's minimal, let's say, but it's enough probably to get a new vision of an existing space. So yes and no, building yes, and where there is no need, no. Building per se, no.
How do you think artificial intelligence could help us with the climate change? It doesn't need to be expert knowledge. You can just make up a vision.
I think this is a tough question for us, because as you said, we're not expert, but also we're kind of far away from the world of artificial intelligence. I mean, our main tool is hand drawing. So kind of at the opposite side. I think that it is for sure a tool that can help us, for example, understand where something is needed or maybe where something isn't needed. But the human factor for us is so irreplaceable and so, so important in our design thinking that, I mean, artificial intelligence can also be just another way to get to consumerism somehow. So another kind of technology that is added as a layer to our lives. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure you have another opinion on this.
No, I'm just always thinking, okay, everybody is really scared of artificial intelligence. We will lose our jobs. But nobody's talking about how artificial intelligence could save this planet. I don't hear any ideas, not on the news, nowhere. So what should we do with all the really, with this trash that we produce every day and that we just burn up in Ghana? Do you have any idea?
No. No. Of course, artificial intelligence, it can bring, I mean, one of the biggest problems at the moment is that material or the costs of material are much less than the costs of labor. And this makes that the production and also extracting material, it is still very, let's say, interesting for investors than to recycle, for example. Mm-hmm. And there is a huge potential in being or producing in a sustainable way, since it will be possible to by automatizing with some artificial intelligence processes that nowadays are only possible with human labor. There could be the chance to make, like, for example, recycle in a way that will make much cheaper to recycle than just extract and create new materials. No, so this automatization of processes that nowadays are only made by human hands, for example, also cultivating in some very cultivating, for example, in a way that it's that promotes biodiversity. Of course, if you just have one machine that it's stupid, that just cuts the plants and you don't and doesn't select, you just have to have one kind of plant. But if you have a machine that with a super eye can recognize different vegetable, different plants, and pick on a very selected and precise way what it's needed, as it had before made by people. Well, this could be, in this sense, like this making the machinal work more precise. I think that there is a huge potential.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree?
Yes.
How do you see?
But I think in general, people should talk more about this topic, also connected with artificial intelligence. Because this is the only planet we have. So it would be nice if it stays beautiful. Yeah. How do you imagine the future design process? You just said you draw mostly by hand. What program do you use if you do not use your hand?
I mean, we also use a CAD program. So in our case, it's Vectorworks and Rhino. But I mean, it would be great to have tools that facilitate our work more and more. I know that now BIM is already there and kind of facilitating the communication between the experts, planners on the team and everything. But I think, for example, in the first steps where you analyze the legal frame of a project, so kind of what is possible and what is not possible, I think there it would be great to have tools that help you. So in all these kind of
mechanical, still mechanical kind of finding all the documents that you need and finding all the constraints that you have in your project. There it would be great to have it with technical help somehow.
I'm trying to learn GIS, so this is also quite cool for like on a more territorial scale, these programs that allows you to see like all the land use and select
for your master.
Yes, but then I'm pretty sure that it's gonna be soon useful also for what we are doing as an office. But yes, I'm learning that from my master.
Sounds really interesting. I started to learn Python, like this coding language.
Into artificial intelligence a lot, no?
Yeah, and then I sit here after work. But it's really, really simple things I do till now, because after work it's quite heavy to sit there and program something.
Yeah.
So artificial intelligence, you imagine it's a tool that makes the process a little easier. You push the button and then there come like 10 to 20 variations how you could do it, how it's possible. And then you decide and you take this and then you do your design.
I mean, this could be something that happens already in the next few years. Now, this
I think it's already here.
Yes, I mean, we don't know about it. Send it to us. And I don't know anybody who like helps you with the legal frame. I mean, you can click on a parcel and it tells you some things, but the work that you have to do after that is still very big.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but the human being should always be the one deciding.
At the end, for me, the key word is interpretation, that you have to be able to interpret data. No? It's like with big data.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you just confirm what is already there. And this is in no way brings to changes. Like it would be like also completely freezing of our society, and there is always the need to also put things into question. And there is also this interpretation and subjectivity, I would say also that is crucial.
Mm-hmm.
And contexts are somehow always so surprising to us that we couldn't give parameters to define it beforehand. Like there are some parameters for sure. I'm not quite sure you can grasp it all with artificial intelligence, but maybe also because I don't know enough about it.
Yeah, we will probably find out. And how do you imagine the future work and living space? Will it go back after Corona to workplace and living place, you work, you go home? Or will it be like a fusion out of work and living, that you don't actually have the feeling, okay, I go to work now, because it's kind of like more part of your actually living space, and that you are more flexible, you can work from wherever you want, or do you go back to the office?
I think that fusion might become more and more attractive. We also think that, or we hope, I mean, this is a little bit of practicing of some wishful thinking, but this individualization and this extreme cherish of the individual in society that has been happening over the last decades, that it might go back a little bit more to recognizing again the value of togetherness and collectivity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this would solve already so many problems of the use of space that we have at the moment, that sharing a space is not maybe any more connotated with being something bad somehow, mm-hmm. or something that is constraining. But in our wishful thinking, norms of living together might be overthought in the next decades again, and this individual, very also a little bit egoistic and elbows out and arising of the individual might not be the kind of the only way of thinking in our Western society.
Mm-hmm. You completely agree.
I agree. I think that work will be flexible between, I mean, that we will be completely as we are now already, that we decide if we want to work in the office, if we want to work home, if we want to work from Zurich or from Lugano, we are completely free. But I don't see, or I still recognize quite well the moments in which I'm working and the moments in which I'm in vacations. And I think this is still important. Then, of course, there is an influence of the two worlds, but they are still in my head. This distinction, it's important in order to also being able to get other inputs. Yeah. But yeah, I think that in general terms, also if you see like the last analysis of the biggest banks and so on, what they see is that in the near future, at least between two and three days a week will be spent at home. I mean, you will be working from home, and then the rest, yes, in the office, because I think that also everyone is recognizing that there is this need of meeting other people.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't agree.
Yeah. I agree. Okay. Like, you need your individual life and the freedom to be flexible, but also it doesn't work out if you just disappear.
No.
And you just call me once a week or something. No, sometimes it's really important to sit together and talk over the plan, because it's a different feeling. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
Last question. What means architecture for you personally?
This is the mother of all questions. So, since we don't have like a top-down thinking, but rather a bottom-up, I wouldn't say participative, but somehow yes. And for me, architecture is kind of the background that frames life, or in front of which life can take place, mm-hmm. but for sure not the foreground. And a background which you can relate with and lean on, but doesn't impose itself into your life somehow.
Yeah, I completely agree. I would also say that this background, it's also creating an identity. And I think that the nice idea of identity is that it goes from one generation to the other. So it's not just life that it's taking part at the moment, but it's also the life that was there in the past that creates like a certain specificity or identity that then stays also for the lives that will take place afterwards.
I will just leave it like this and say thank you very much. It was really nice to talk to you. And thank you that you gave me the chance to have you as my guest. I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, we too. You're welcome. If you pass going to Italy, if you pass to Switzerland, you're welcome to visit us either in Zurich or in Lugano. You have the chance to decide.
Probably both. I would just call. This was this week's episode. We really hope you liked it as much as we did. If you have comments, suggestions, critic, please let us know. And till next time on What's Next. Ciao, ciao!